You're listening to the world's best business podcast with Steli Efti and Heaton Shaw,
who insisted on having Steli's name mentioned first, despite him having more Twitter followers.
Shut up!
If you're an entrepreneur who wants to get shit done, stop everything else and focus on this podcast for the next 20 minutes. Then go back to work and crush it.
Hey guys, this is Steli and Heaton on another podcast. Today still, you know, me from Berlin. This is a remote podcast this time, and Heaton in hopefully sunny California, I guess so.
It's sunny.
It's sunny, huh?
Yeah.
It's really rainy here. I describe it as like Matrix-like. There's like green, grayish layer on top of reality. But still awesome. So today what we want to talk about is content marketing, but even more specifically, one thing that bothers me about the content marketing we do at Close.io, which is predictability of content marketing. So, you know, at Close.io, anything we do on the marketing side is content marketing. We love it. That's how we grow the business. That's kind of our top of the funnel. The way people learn about us is either through word of mouth or through the content that we produce. So content marketing is really important to us, and we love it. We get a lot of positive feedback. It grows the business. All that's awesome. But the thing that we haven't figured out yet, and that I'd love to talk to you about, Heaton, is predictability. So what I mean by that is we produce a lot of content and we have kind of an idea how much traffic and how many signups we're going to have. And we know that it's probably going to be bigger than last month. And we have hopes and dreams and goals on how much it should be, but we don't feel like we have full control over what it's actually going to be. So some months are much better than we thought they would, and some months are worse than we thought they would be. And we don't truly know what the numbers are going to be the next 3 months from now, no matter like how much planning we do, which pisses us off, like which sucks. So let's talk about that. You are like one of the content marketing all-time whatever rock stars on the internet. So how do you think about predictability? What am I missing? How can I like figure this out for my business?
Awesome. I love content marketing. I think that I'm starting with my thesis. I think it's the fastest way to create a brand. And when you think about a brand, it's really having literally having a piece of many minds, like sort of consumed with your brand, your name, whatever it may be. And I think that the reason a lot of us have trouble, even I have trouble with this, but I have a theory. And it works for us, at least it actually works at everything I do around the content marketing. But basically, the issue is that you're trying to create content to get customers when you actually should be creating content to build your brand and extend your brand and sit there in someone's brain or a lot of people's brains. And that means that they might not be ready to sign up, or they might not be thinking about needing a CRM product like yours. But what they do know is that you're the most, you know, your content is the most helpful content out there for sales. And that's all they really need to know until they're ready, because they're going to keep coming back. I mean, at one time years ago, we did a study at Kissmetrics. We do a lot of content marketing, and that's the number one customer acquisition channel, and it always has been. And we did an analysis, and what we learned is that, I forgot the exact number, but I think the number was like $7 or $8. It cost us $7 or $8 per lead. When you look at our pay-per-click, just for a click, it would cost you $20 to $30 or more just for a click in our market with analytics. Mm-hmm. So that's one data point. Another data point I'll say, and this is where I think gets into kind of what you're talking about, is on average, it takes people 7 blog posts or 7 visits to the blog before they actually end up signing up. We did this a long time ago. And once we got these two data points, we just stopped. We're like, okay, cool, because it's not very hard to get that. I'm sorry, it's not very easy to get that information. It's also not the hardest thing to do. But you know, once you have that kind of data, you're like, okay, cool. Like I understand how this works. If I want things to happen faster or get more conversions or whatever, get predictability, I think I have to come up with other ways than just creating content and expecting signups. So what we did at Kissmetrics, I think one of the strategies, there's two or three strategies, but one of the strategies we did that I've seen you use too, and I'm a big fan of, is we started repurposing our content, and some of it we would actually gate. So we've taken some of our awesome blog posts, turned them into PDFs, added some good design to them, and made them behind a sort of lead gen wall saying, oh, you want this, you want the PDF, you want to share it with your team or whatever, fill out this form and they turn into a lead. So that is somewhat more predictable, but we're just using our current traffic to get that conversion. We do the same thing with our webinars, where we'll do webinars. That's another way we convert. So we know that if we can get X amount of people on a webinar, Y amount of them, some usually single digit to small double digit percentage will want, sometimes more, will want a demo of the product. And that's a lead as well. So what it really is think of your content marketing as the base. It's basically the base layer of the cake, the bottom of it. And everything else you're building is on top of that, but it's built off of that. So if there's no base, you can't get as many leads from webinars. You can't get as many leads from opt-ins like ebooks and PDFs and white papers and stuff like that, because this base traffic is what ends up converting. And I think there's a lot of creative ways to do that. I mean, at one point, we were doing two webinars a week. One was a Kissmetrics demo and another was a regular like content marketing style webinar. And that was really helping at scaling the signups. The other thing is, once you have enough traffic, this is like the third tactic, but you need enough traffic, is probably at least about 50 to 100,000 visitors, is you basically start doing a lot of conversion rate optimization and A/B testing, and you just try to find ways to convert those people directly to signups on their first visit, second visit, whatever. So that's my quick rant on, like, you're building a brand. You're not building a conversion machine or a signup machine first. You're building a brand.
Yeah, I love that. That's a really great way of framing it and thinking about it. And, you know, one thing that we realized when we started calling customers to discover how they discovered us, like what content or what channel did they come from, and have like conversations with them about that. And we try to do that. Every person who signs up gets an email from me, and in that email, I ask people how they heard about us. But also we try to call people and have conversations around that once in a while. But one thing that was surprising was how much of our content was not just marketing, although we thought about it purely as marketing, but how much of it was also, you could call it branding, but branding with a true, making a true impact on sales, in the sense that a lot of people's experience would be that they would sign up for a trial, for instance, without having discovered our blog or content, and then they would discover the content and very quickly make the decision, oh, these people are the thought leaders on sales, so I'm just going to buy their product. Like, just making a buying decision based on the quality of content versus just purely on the quality of the product. The other interesting thing, I remember us chatting about this, not on this podcast, but many months ago when we had coffee one day, was about like content that's really tactical and teaches your customers how to be more successful and what they do, broadly speaking. And then content that is designed as more top of the funnel, that makes people discover you and share your content, right? There's kind of different types of content that you write, because it's designed to be shared and designed to spread, versus the content that goes really deep and is designed to help people solve a specific problem, become better versions of themselves, a better version, but more successful at what they're doing in the field that you're offering a product in. How do you think about that, the types of content? Do you still think there's a difference between the two, or do you think it's at the end of the day?
Yeah, absolutely. I think once you start getting your content machine together, you can create hypotheses or guesses around what the content's going to do. You should be splitting up your content between content that gets a lot of reach. Usually those are things that do really well with social media, and then content that's designed for conversion, that's specifically around getting people to sign up because they read that content. It still should all be educational, and you should try to maximize the reach, but it's very, very tricky, almost impossible in some ways, to find content that does both at the same time. When you do, though, you know it. A lot of times you'll write something like, okay, I can title this a certain way, I can tweak the content itself a little bit, and I can get reach, but it's also going to just nail it. So like, for example, if I told people, if I wrote a blog post today on the Kissmetrics blog, if it was about analytics, and I said, you don't need any analytics, you don't need analytics. Analytics is dead, or something like crazy like that. And then I made a whole argument about it. It's likely it would get a lot of spread. And if my argument was great, it might even get signups.
Yeah, that would be a great blog post, by the way.
Well, I do think analytics is dead, but that's a whole different topic.
All right. That's a good teaser. Now people are going to be looking out on their Twitter stream to ever see you write that or share a post like that. All right. So let's talk about the repurpose and remix a little bit more, right? So I like the premise of think of your content as branding, and it takes people a lot of interest. What you want is you want to occupy mindshare and people thinking of you in a certain way, building a relationship with you, feeling a certain way about you and your company. And at the right time, they'll sign up and they'll turn themselves into leads. That is kind of the foundation. But one layer above that, we're talking about remix, repurposing to turn some of that content into things that are more tactical in turning people, like gating some of that content to get people to give you their email address and come further down the funnel. What other ways are there to remix and repurpose? Because remixing and repurposing content is probably one of the top advice I give to people when they ask me about content marketing. Like a lot of people approach us and go, oh, Stelly, you know, I see you guys are everywhere, which is not true. But you guys were a lot more everywhere than us. But even in our case, people are like, oh, you're everywhere. How do you do it? And then it's like, have you read everything we do? No. Well, if you did, you would realize how much of that everywhere is born on our blog. And then we just reuse and repurpose it for different platforms. That way we can really leverage everything we do and take one idea that we turn into a video, that then we turn into a blog post, that then we turn into a number of tweets, that then we turn into an answer on Quora, that then we turn into, you know, an ebook, and it makes it seem like we made a million things happen, but it all started with one piece of content. But talk about that strategy and kind of some creative ways that people could reuse and repurpose and how to do that well.
Yeah, I think it's one of the key strategies out there. But let's talk about the history of that. I would say that repurposing has been around for a long time, but like on the internet, it really started kicking in once we had these large social media platforms, social networks, whatever you want to call them, start blowing up, and us having a lot more of them with different points of view. So for example, the content you share on Facebook should be different than what you share on Twitter. Should be different than what you can share on Pinterest, should be different than what you would share on Instagram, which will be different than what you share on Snapchat. And the reason is the mode people are in when they're in those networks is way different for each of them. For example, with Facebook, it's like pics of kids, like all day, every day, right? Like that's what you see, especially on the weekends.
Yeah.
Selfies, lots of selfies on Facebook I've seen, all that kind of stuff. That's like what it's all about. It's how awesome your life is or whatever. And then on Twitter, it's really just an information stream. Like you want content, you want information, you want to know what's going on right now, Twitter's the spot, right? Or that last tweet storm from Mark Andreessen, whatever. And then if you're on Pinterest, like it's a very visual medium, right? So like for me, I love cooking, so I'll go find recipes on Medium, or it's the best place for me to find all the black matte cars that I want to look at. You know, the ones that are painted black matte, like flat black. I really like that color.
Huh.
And so you would really have to think about these mediums. Like even Snapchat, it's like if you go look at what's on there, it's actually the way the stories feature and all the stuff works on there now, I think it's really a way to tell a story about an event. That's what I consider Snapchat these days. And so if you have an event, Snapchat's probably a pretty good place to highlight it if you have some audience there and if business is relevant to that. Instagram, I think, it's just, again, very visual. You can make anything look good. And so, you know, if you have something visually appealing or you have a brand that like you'd like to share that, I think Instagram's good for that. So I guess my opinion of it is you're not going to go create necessarily 100% different stuff for all those platforms. But you can pick the platforms that are important to your business and then go start making sure you're creating, repurposing, if you want to call it that, blog posts or whatever your main piece of content is into all these other mediums.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's, I mean, the point of this is also, yeah, understanding the medium that you use. So if you understand the medium and what the audience is like and what they're looking for on that medium, you can customize your message in a way that resonates, right? Otherwise, you just pollute the system with noise, but nobody really cares about it, at least at that. One other thing that I'll share on the repurposing, remixing is that a lot of times, I mean, it depends on what kind of content you create, but if you create really original content in the sense that it's not just like, let's do 10 things that everybody should do to be more productive, right? Which can be awesome if you do it right, but could also just be vanilla and really useless to most people. But if you create original content, which means you have original insights, ideas, tactics, strategies, real stories, real things you're doing that you haven't learned or copy-pasted on other sites, but you really